Page 63. Chapter 8. Okonkwo did not taste any food for 2 days after the death of Ikemifuna. He drank palm wine from morning till night, and his eyes were red and fierce, like the eyes of a rat when it was caught by the tail and dashed against the floor. He called his son Wu Ye to sit with him in his obi. But the boy was afraid of him, and slipped out of the hut as soon as he noticed him dozing. He did not sleep at night. He tried not to think about Ikemifuna, but the more he tried, the more he thought about him. Once he got up from bed and walked about his compound, but he was so weak that his legs could hardly carry him. He felt like a drunken giant walking with the limbs of a mosquito. Now and then a cold shiver descended on his head and spread down his body. On the third day he asked his second wife, Ikwefi, to roast plantains for him. She prepared it the way he liked, with slices of oil bean and fish. "You have not eaten for 2 days," said his daughter Ezinma, when she brought the food to him, "so you must finish this." She sat down and stretched her legs in front of her. Page 64. Okonkwo ate the food absent-mindedly. She should have been a boy, he thought, as he looked at his 10-year-old daughter. He passed her a piece of fish. "Go and bring me some cold water," he said. Izinma rushed out of the hut, chewing the fish, and soon returned with a bowl of cool water from the earthen pot in her mother's hut. Okonkwo took the bowl from her and gulped the water down. He ate a few more pieces of plantain and pushed the dish aside. "Bring me my bag," he asked. And Izinma brought his goatskin bag from the far end of the hut. He searched in it for his snuff bottle. It was a deep bag and took almost the whole length of his arm. It contained other things apart from his snuff bottle. There was a drinking horn in it, and also a drinking gourd, and they knocked against each other as he searched. When he brought out the snuff bottle, he tapped it a few times against his kneecap before taking out some snuff on the palm of his left hand. Then he remembered that he had not taken out his snuff spoon. He searched his bag again, and brought out a small, flat, ivory spoon with which he carried the brown snuff to his nostrils. Izinma took the dish in one hand and the empty water bowl in the other, and went back to her mother's hut. "She should have been a boy," Okonkwo said to himself again. His mind went back to Ikemifuna, and he shivered. If only he could find some work to do, he would be able to forget. But it was the season of rest between the harvest and the next planting season. The only work that men did at this time was covering the walls of their compound with new palm fronds. Page 65. And Okonkwo had already done that. He had finished it on the very day the locusts came, when he had worked on one side of the wall, and Ikemifuna and Wu Ye on the other. "When did you become a shivering old woman?" Okonkwo asked himself. "You, who are known in all the 9 villages for your valor in war. How can a man who has killed 5 men in battle fall to pieces because he has added a boy to their number? Okonkwo, you have become a woman indeed." He sprang to his feet, hung his goatskin bag on his shoulder, and went to visit his friend Obierika. Obierika was sitting outside under the shade of an orange tree, making thatches from leaves of the raffia palm. He exchanged greetings with Okonkwo and led the way into his obi. "I was coming over to see you as soon as I finished that thatch," he said, rubbing off the grains of sand that clung to his thighs. "Is it well?" Okonkwo asked. "Yes," replied Obierika. "My daughter's suitor is coming today, and I hope we will clinch the matter of the bride price. I want you to be there." Just then, Obierika's son, Maduka, came into the obi from outside, greeted Okonkwo, and turned towards the compound. "Come and shake hands with me," Auconcour said to the lad. "Your wrestling the other day gave me much happiness." The boy smiled, shook hands with Auconcour, and went into the compound. "He will do great things," Auconcour said. "If I had a son like him, I should be happy." Page 66. "I am worried about Wu Ye. A bowl of pounded yams can throw him in a wrestling match. His two younger brothers are more promising, but I can tell you, Obierica, that my children do not resemble me. Where are the young suckers that will grow when the old banana tree dies? If Izin Ma had been a boy, I would have been happier. She has the right spirit." "You worry yourself for nothing," said Obierica. "The children are still very young. Wu Ye is old enough to impregnate a woman. At his age, I was already fending for myself." "No, my friend, he's not too young. A chick that will grow into a cock can be spotted the very day it hatches. I have done my best to make Wu Ye grow into a man, but there is too much of his mother in him." "Too much of his grandfather," Obierica thought, but he did not say it. The same thought also came to Okonkwo's mind, but he had long ago learned how to lay that ghost. Whenever the thought of his father's weakness and failure troubled him, he expelled it by thinking about his own strength and success. And so he did now. His mind went to his latest show of manliness. "I cannot understand why you refused to come with us to kill that boy," he asked Obierica. "Because I did not want to," Obierica replied sharply. "I had something better to do." "You sound as if you questioned the authority in the decisions of the oracle, who said he should die." "I do not. Why should I? But the oracle did not ask me to carry out its decision." Page 67. "But someone had to do it. If we were all afraid of blood, it would not be done. And what do you think the oracle would do then?" "You know very well, Auconcour, that I'm not afraid of blood, and if anyone tells you that I am, he is telling a lie. And let me tell you one thing, my friend. If I were you, I would have stayed at home. What you have done will not please the earth. It is the kind of action for which the goddess wipes out whole families." "The earth cannot punish me for obeying her messenger," Auconcour said. "A child's fingers are not scalded by a piece of hot yam which its mother puts into its palm." "That is true," Obierica agreed. "But if the oracle said that my son should be killed, I would neither dispute it nor be the one to do it." They would have gone on arguing had Ofo Edu not come in just then. It was clear from his twinkling eyes that he had important news, but it would be impolite to rush him. Obierica offered him a lobe of the kola nut he had broken with Auconcour. Ofoedu ate slowly and talked about the locusts. When he had finished his kola nut, he said, "The things that happen these days are very strange." "What has happened?" asked Auconcour. "Do you know Ogbuefi Du Lue?" Ofuedu asked. "Ogbuefi Du Lue of Ire village?" Auconcour and Obierica said together. "He died this morning," said Ofuedu. "That is not strange. He was the oldest man in Ire," said Obierica. Page 68. "You are right," Ofuedu agreed. "But you ought to ask why the drum has not beaten to tell Umuofia of his death." "Why?" asked Obierica and Auconcour together. "That is the strange part of it. You know his first wife, who walks with a stick?" "Yes, she's called Ozo Emena." "That is so," said Ofoedu. "Ozo Emena was, as you know, too old to attend Du Lue during his illness. His younger wives did that. When he died this morning, one of these women went to Ozoemena's hut and told her. She rose from her mat, took her stick, and walked over to the Obi. She knelt on her knees and hands at the threshold and called her husband, who was laid on a mat. 'Obuefi du Lue,' she called three times, and went back to her hut. When the youngest wife went to call her again to be present at the washing of the body, she found her lying on the mat, dead. "That is very strange indeed," said Okonkwo. "They will put off Du Lue's funeral until his wife has been buried. That is why the drum has not been beaten to tell Umuofia. It was always said that Du Lue and Ozoemena had one mind," said Oboyerika. "I remember when I was a young boy, there was a song about them. He could not do anything without telling her." "I did not know that," said Okonkwo. "I thought he was a strong man in his youth." "He was indeed," said Ofoedu. Okonkwo shook his head doubtfully. "He led Umuofia to war in those days," said Oboyerika. Page 69. Okonkwo was beginning to feel like his old self again. All that he required was something to occupy his mind. If he had killed Ikemefuna during the busy planting season or harvesting, it would not have been so bad. His mind would have been centered on his work. Okonkwo was not a man of thought, but of action. But in absence of work, talking was the next best. Soon after Ofoedu left, Okonkwo took up his goatskin bag to go. "I must go home to tap my palm trees for the afternoon," he said. "Who taps your tall trees for you?" asks Obierika. "Umezulike," replied Okonkwo. "Sometimes I wish I had not taken the Ozo title," said Obierika. "It wounds my heart to see these young men killing palm trees in the name of tapping." "It is so indeed," Okonkwo agreed, "but the law of the land must be obeyed." "I don't know how we got that law," said Obierika. "In many other clans, a man of title is not forbidden to climb the palm tree. Here, we say he cannot climb the tall tree, but he can tap the short ones standing on the ground. It is like Di Maragana, who would not lend his knife for cutting up dog meat, because the dog was taboo to him, but offered to use his teeth. I think it is good that our clan holds the Ozo title in high esteem," said Okonkwo. Page 70. "In those other clans you speak of, Ozo is so low that every beggar takes it." "I was only speaking in jest," said Obierika. "In Abame and Aninta, the title is worth less than 2 cowries. Every man wears the thread of title on his ankle, and does not lose it, even if he steals." "They have indeed soiled the name of Ozo," said Okonkwo as he rose to go. "It will not be very long now before my in-laws come," said Obierika. "I shall return very soon," said Okonkwo, looking at the position of the sun. There were 7 men in Obierika's hut when Okonkwo returned. The suitor was a young man of about 25, and with him were his father and uncle. On Obierika's side were his 2 elder brothers and Maduka, his 16-year-old son. "Ask Akueke's mother to send us some kola nuts," said Obierika to his son. Maduka vanished into the compound like lightning. The conversation at once centered on him, and everybody agreed that he was as sharp as a razor. "I sometimes think he is too sharp," said Obierika, somewhat indulgently. "He hardly ever walks. He's always in a hurry. If you are sending him on an errand, he flies away before he has heard half of the message." "You were very much like that yourself," said his eldest brother. "As our people say, when mother cow is chewing grass, its young ones watch its mouth. Maduka has been watching your mouth." Page 71. As he was speaking, the boy returned, followed by Akueke, his half-sister, carrying a wooden dish with 3 kola nuts and alligator pepper. She gave the dish to her father's eldest brother, and then shook hands, very shyly, with her suitor and his relatives. She was about 16, and just ripe for marriage. Her suitor and his relatives surveyed her young body with expert eyes, as if to assure themselves that she was beautiful and ripe. She wore a coiffure, which was done up into a crest in the middle of the head. Camwood was rubbed lightly into her skin, and all over her body were black patterns drawn with uli. She wore a black necklace, which hung down in 3 coils just above her full, succulent breasts. On her arms were red and yellow bangles, and on her waist, 4 or 5 rows of jigida, or waist beads. When she had shaken hands, or rather, held out her hand to be shaken, she returned to her mother's hut to help with the cooking. "Remove your jigida first," her mother warned as she moved near the fireplace to bring the pestle resting against the wall.